From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week, it's a canonization special here on Register Radio. Jeanette DiMello gets a preview of events in Rome for the canonization of Popes John the 23rd and John Paul II from the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton. Also, Dan Burke talks with Anthony Lillis about the spirituality of the Church's newest Pope saints. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks again for joining us. Our first guest, Edward Penton, is the Register's Rome correspondent. He's covered the Register's Vatican news for the last 10 years. Before that, Edward reported for Vatican Radio. His work has appeared in Newsweek, Newsmax, Zenit, and other publications. Edward, welcome again to Register Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Edward, you're there in Rome. You're living my dream. Every night this week I've dreamed about being in Rome for this special event, for this occasion of the canonizations of John the 23rd and John Paul II. Tell us what the atmosphere is like in Rome right now.
Well, it's been building all week, really, Jeanette. Lots of people are starting to really flood in now. Now it's Thursday, and it's only 3 days away. So we've got lots of Polish people coming, of course, pilgrims from northern Italy for John the 23rd, but also people from all over the world, especially those who were particularly touched by John Paul II in their lives, and they're making a great effort to come here, despite all the crowds and the expense and the logistical problems. Everybody's still keen to come. Nobody knows quite how many people will come. It could be estimates were given yesterday by the Vicariat of Rome and the Rome authorities. They said anything between 500,000 and a million.
Wow.
But I think probably more than that. And some people are estimating 7 million, but we'll just have to wait and see. No one has really any clue the exact figures, of course, until Sunday.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if there was more than a million for sure. But what kind of events are planned over the weekend? Of course, the canonization is Sunday. EWTN will be covering that live. We'll have it on live stream at the Register's website, ncregister.com. But what other events are happening over this special weekend?
Well, it's actually not that many compared to the beatification of John Paul II, when there was a few big celebrations and there was a big prayer vigil in Circus Maximus, which is a big field. They used to race chariots in Roman times. That was a huge event in 2011. This time there really is very little. There is going to be on Saturday is the prayer vigils and liturgies in various languages in 11 churches in the center of Rome from 9 o'clock. And it's a chance for the people to go to confession and to pray for John Paul II, and of course being on the eve of Divine Mercy Sunday, prayers for that as well, praying the chaplet of the Divine Mercy chaplet. So that'll be going on Saturday night. There's also going to be a vigil mass at St. Paul's outside the walls, the Basilica there, at 5 o'clock tomorrow on Saturday evening. So that's about it, really, on the Saturday. And then, of course, there's the canonization on the Sunday beginning at 10 o'clock. It's probably gone for about a couple of hours. And then there's a mass of Thanksgiving on the Monday.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm talking with Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton about the upcoming canonizations of John the 23rd and John Paul II. Now, Edward, both of these popes obviously were Bishop of Rome, so they were pastors to the people of Rome. So the people of Rome are very, very excited for them to come, but for them to have this beautiful canonization celebration. But at the same time, there are people from all over the world, and there are some diplomats. I mean, both of these popes were known for their diplomacy. Who are some of the diplomats, the dignitaries that will come and celebrate this event?
Yes, that's a very good point, Jeanette, because these two popes really did open the Church to the world in that sense. And, of course, when you compare how many countries had diplomatic ties with the Vatican before John the 23rd and how many have them now, it's a completely different story. So there will be a big diplomatic representation. I believe something like, I think, 20 or so heads of state are coming, or more. and 54 different delegations from 54 different countries. So it'll be a huge state occasion as well. You've got, of course, all the ambassadors here. You've got some. Nobody really knows exactly who those heads of state are until they arrive. The Vatican always has the policy of not actually inviting heads of state, but they're free to come if they want, and that avoids them getting into sort of difficult diplomatic embarrassments. For example, if there's a dictator who wants to come, well, he can come, but the Vatican can say, well, he's not invited. We didn't invite him. But we won't really know the full number, I think, until or exactly who will be coming until the Sunday. But certainly some very interesting people. One of them, one of which is Lech Wałęsa, who's coming, the great man who struggled against communism, and obviously a great ally of John Paul II. So he'll be here, and various others.
Now, there have been press briefings all week long, I think since Tuesday. And what have these press briefings told you about the events of the week, or what are they all about?
Well, they're basically just prepping journalists, really, on what the popes are, who the popes are, and just some general background on them, and on preparations leading up to the event. We had earlier in the week the two postulators for both the popes, for John the 22nd, John the 23rd, and John Paul II, and they gave a testimony to their holiness, really, just explaining why they're being canonized. And going through the facts that that they're not being canonized because they're perfect. No one is, of course, is perfect. So they were just explaining that their personal holiness and their outstanding holiness, and going through that and explaining how close they live to the Lord and their close union with God, and explaining how that that made them the saints that they are. So that was interesting, especially for those outside the church who don't really understand the whole process and exactly what makes a saint. So that was helpful. And then yesterday there was a briefing from the Vicariate of Rome, who basically said that gave the detailed logistical challenges and the numbers of various statistics, how many priests are going to be on hand, and how many coachloads of Poles will be coming, about 1,700. Coaches are coming from Poland, so that's an enormous number. So that sort of thing. I think today there will be a briefing on the Petrine ministry of John Paul II and John the 23rd, just explaining their role in the church as the successor of Peter. So just various things, really, just to help journalists better understand the whole process.
Sure. Now, Pope Francis really has a job ahead of him, trying to give the homily for this particular event. It's going to be really, I think, a challenge for him to put into a nutshell what characterizes the holiness of these two popes, and at the same time, just appeal to all of the people who are there. Edward, we're really just about out of time, and I'm so grateful to have you there covering this event. I know you'll be writing a couple of stories for us and blogging when you can. We'll be with you, obviously, in spirit, and I invite all of our readers to check out the Register's coverage of these two wonderful popes, John Paul II and John the 23rd. Papal Saints for the New Evangelization is the title of our special section, and I invite all of our readers to join in this special event by looking at our website, ncregister.com. Edward, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
When we return, we'll talk about the Church's newest Pope Saints and their spirituality. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican. Good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Dr. Anthony Lillis, is a founding faculty member of St. John Vianney Theological Seminary, where he served as academic dean for 9 years and is a scholar and author in the field of spiritual theology. His recent book, Hidden Mountain, Secret Garden, A Theological Contemplation on Prayer, is a compilation of discussions with seminarians, students, and contemplatives all about the spiritual life. So he's very qualified to talk about the spirituality of Pope John the 23rd and John Paul II.
Well, thank you so much for having me this morning.
Anthony, it's great to have you with us. It's such an exciting time to be a Catholic. It's glorious to be able to watch, to be a part of, to be witness to the canonizations of modern saints, the Blessed John Paul II and John the 23rd. Specifically, it's such an encouraging time to lift up the teachings of the Second Vatican Council, which I believe these canonizations in many ways affirm. But today we wanted to talk a bit and dig in a bit regarding John Paul's spirituality, and have you give us some insights into the depths of his faith, and I think which we all understand and believe fueled so much of his ability to have such a profound impact on the world, on the Catholic Church, but also on the world. And I thought a good place to start would be his Carmelite leanings. Tell us a bit about how it is that he initially was exposed to Carmelite spirituality.
Well, in Vadovica, where he grew up, there's a Carmelite monastery there, and I think that had a lot to do with it. I'm conjecturing a little bit, but the proximity of that to where he lived, I imagine there must have been an impact there. It's kind of an artist town, and he would have seen that monastery, maybe even visited it regularly. But there's another reason, though, besides the proximity of the monastery to his hometown, and that is what happened in Poland while he was growing up. With the invasion of Germany from the north and the west and the south, and the invasion of Russia from the east while he was a student in Krakow, their whole world was turned upside down. And trying to find a footing in all that and trying to make sense out of everything that you know being taken away from you, I think opened up some deep spiritual questions. And he had a mentor from his parish. In his neighborhood, there was a Salesian parish, and the priests, before they were taken away into prison, they asked a layman named Jan Tarnowski, a tailor, to begin to form young people in the faith so that the young people could spread the faith. And this tailor's name was Jan Tarnowski, and Jan somehow reached out to Carol Blachowicz, and that connection ended up deeply forming the soul of the future pope. Jan was an essentialist thinker, a small intellectual group. He had given up being an accountant to take up being a tailor because he needed a quiet life to devote himself to contemplation. And he passed all that wisdom on to Karol Wojtyła.
That's fascinating. Now, as Karol Wojtyła's spirituality developed, he eventually attempted to enter into a Carmelite religious life, didn't he?
He did. And he didn't get a lot of support. The Carmelites questioned it, but so did some of the priests who were involved in his life. And the reason was he had a very, very energetic personality, that was very culturally engaged. And the feeling among people who were advising him, except for maybe Jan Taranovsky himself, the feeling among most of the other priests in his life was that his gifts would work better in the diocesan priesthood. That being said, though, he carried that kind of Carmelite heart he had with him into the diocesan priesthood, and I think that's what gave him a little extra depth as in his own formation and pathway to the priesthood in the beginning of the ministry. He had this deep love for this contemplative tradition that the Carmelites witnessed to in the church.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking to Dr. Anthony Lillis, who is a scholar of spiritual theology, about Blessed John Paul II's spirituality, and particular his emphasis in the Carmelite realm of spirituality. Dr. Lillis, eventually, in his seminary work and his ongoing education and his formation, he pursued a doctorate, and it was focused on St. John of the Cross's view of faith. Why is it you think that he took went that direction? Because that's not an easy task for anyone digging into John of the Cross. But what do you think was particularly compelling about St. John and specifically his views on faith?
Well, I think Karol Wojtyła resonated with John of the Cross. They were both poets, and he understood the poetic language that John of the Cross was speaking about, used actually to communicate his doctrine. But the doctrine itself, I think, also resonated with him. Again, in a world turned totally upside down, where you're trying to find firm ground to stand on, John of the Cross proposes that faith alone provides that ground. Because by faith we know a saving truth that exceeds the natural capacity of our intellects to understand. But when we believe it anyway, and when we and what is it that we believe? The love of God. St. Paul says, "I've come to know to believe in the love of God." In other words, St. Paul saying, "I experienced something, and that something that I experienced, I believe, defines my existence." That's what you find in the writings of John of the Cross, and it's also the key idea that gives John Paul II the confidence he needs to proclaim the gospel of Christ even when the whole world is falling apart around him. He knows that heaven and earth can fall out of the sky, but the word of the Lord stands firm forever, because it's a word of love, and God's love is irrevocable. He has that faith. It's what John of the Cross teaches, and it's what formed him.
It's fascinating. His spirituality is so fascinating. There's a few interesting events that spoke to the depth of his commitment to prayer. One was when he was a bishop, or when he was appointed as a bishop, he spent 7 hours, in adoration in an Ursuline convent in Warsaw. Yeah. And then more humorously, he seemed to vanish after he was appointed as Pope, and he was discovered laying prostrate before the Blessed Sacrament in his private chapel, which I thought, what a beautiful testimony to where his heart is and what's most important and what he understands is the true source of what he needs to lead the Catholics of the world. But why don't we turn a corner? We've got a few more minutes and talk about his Marian, the aspect of his spirituality that is Marian. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's interesting that it ties together. You know, he wrote an encyclical on Mary, the Mother of the Redeemer, and towards the end of that encyclical, he describes Mary standing at the foot of the cross in the face of the total antithesis of everything that was promised to her about her son, but she stands there with faith. And I think in a very real way, Carol Wojtyła believed that Mary mothered him in the faith, that her maternal love formed his heart so that he could stand there with her. And this happened. The two main things that kind of moved him in this direction, I think, are, number one, after his mother died at a very early age, his father took him to a place called Calvaria. It's a replica of the Holy Land, and there's an image to Our Lady there, Our Lady of Calvaria. And his father consecrated young Carol to Our Lady, and then later on, I think under the impetus of Jan Tiernovsky, who not only taught them about Carmelite spirituality, but also introduced other figures like St. Louis de Montfort, I think Carol Wojtyła at that time made the consecration, the total consecration that St. Louis de Montfort speaks of. And I think those two things, what his father did for him when he was just a boy, making Mary his mother when he didn't have an earthly mother, and what the young man Carol Wojtyła chose to do as part of his faith in choosing to take Mary as his mother. In fact, he said, you know, I was never amazed that Mary should take us to Jesus. I just knew that was true. But over the years, what has amazed me the most is that Jesus would love us so much that he would give us his mother. And he speaks about being astonished over that gift and what it means that that Jesus has given us everything, including his own earthly mother, so that we might be able to enter into a fullness of life with him. He's held nothing back. And I think those sorts of graces in the life of soon to be canonized John Paul II, I think these things formed profoundly his views on not only Mary and on the generosity of the Lord, but also on the human person and on the meaning of the role of women in the church and in society, and the meaning of women and their dignity, that they are an indispensable part of God's plan for the salvation of humanity. He clings to that because of what he's experienced with Mary.
Anthony, it's great to have you with us today. We're all out of time. There's a couple of resources I want to point to for folks to learn more. One, you've given a series of video lectures that folks can find at rcspiritualdirection.com. That's Roman, R as in Roman, C as in Catholic, spiritualdirection.com. But also at ncregister.com, we have a review from you of the spirituality of John the 23rd, his book, Journey of a Soul, which is such a powerful book. You've done a review for us that folks can find right now at ncregister.com. That's ncregister.com. Thanks again so much for being with us and giving us a little insight into Blessed John Paul's heart and spirituality and soul. We're grateful for the work that you do for the church, and God bless you.
Thank you, Dan, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for that picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.